So we'd like to again welcome in our presence Mother Jamuna, Mother Malati, and Shamsundarpuru. So we'd like to welcome them by chanting very loudly three Hari Bols.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
Shamsundarpuru ke, Malati Prabhu ke, Jamuna Prabhu ke. So we're very fortunate to have them here on this most auspicious occasion. As was mentioned, basically this whole week has been built up for this specific day. So this day in the Vedic calendar is known as Udhan Shasti. This is the day when Lord Jagannath gets his winter clothes in Jagannath Puri. And it is that same day that Srila Prabhupada installed Shishi Radha Lamanishwara in Berry Place. So we're here gathering to celebrate 40 years of their arrival in London and in our hearts and in our minds and in our prayers. So I'd like for all of you to just take a moment to have a look at Shishi Radha Lamanishwara. Offer a sincere prayer to them on this most auspicious occasion. And drink the nectar of their beautiful forms, covered in beautiful flower petals. Okay. Nice. So,
are you ready, Ursula?
I'd like to also extend a warm welcome on behalf of Soho Street to all the Srila Prabhupada's disciples. We sincerely apologize to all of you for not being able to facilitate you in a better way. I overheard Shamsundarpuru saying during Abhishek that we need a bigger temple. Yes, that is our prayer. We need a bigger temple. So, with all of... Yes, even then it would be full. Yes, it is true. So with all of your blessings, maybe soon Father Lamanishwara can have a place that truly befits their glory. Somehow or other, those of us who serve here are very attached to this small environment. We're very attached to the close nature of being with the deities and the intensity of trying to manage so many devotees. So we please beg all of you for your forgiveness in today's festival. There are many, many, many devotees. I'm not certain, but from what I hear, this is even bigger than the Janmasthamis we've had. So this is pretty big. We apologize to all of you who've been waiting outside patiently. We thank you for your tolerance and patience. We probably will be tested again later on today, so we please ask you to continue sharing in this mood of festival. So without further ado, we'll pass it over to our esteemed speakers.
We'd like to begin before speaking at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Lalanishwara and Jagannath Subhadrapura Ram, say our invocation prayers. Please, everyone together.
Oh,
Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gaura
Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasa this moment, and we all try to be as present as possible for us, each and every one of us, to be as present as we can in this moment, and then zoom back into time 10, 20, 30, 40 years. We go to the day of the installation of Sisi Radharadhanishwar. Srila Prabhupada began this observing this the night before the deities were installed. And the temple was still in progress, practically being finished. But Srila Prabhupada instructed there was this beautiful marble, as you know, you've heard the stories that were on the altar. And Srila Prabhupada instructed me to put candles on the altar. The lights were 1969 spotlights, and we had two of them, one that came from the right side of the front temple wall and one that came from the left side, and they shone down upon the marble where Sri Sri Radhanishwar would tomorrow sit. And all the lights in the temple room were turned off, and white chrysanthemums were spread around the edge of the marble. And then right where Sri Sri Radhanishwar were to sit. And Srila Prabhupada brought us into the temple in the evening. We met there about 7 p.m. And we had the most beautiful kirtan with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada personally arranged for Sri Sri Radhanishwar. I don't know if it's been told in the katha because I wasn't here all week, but it was quite an extraordinary time that Shamsundar Prabhu had carved Lord Jagannath Subhadra and Balaram. And very early on in the summer of that year, we had a program at the Hindu Center, and I saw my first Radha Krishna Archaviggraha in my life, along with many other deities of Archaviggraha that were in a circle like this around the room, in little altars around the room. And I fell in love with marble Archaviggraha, and I had it in my mind's eye that that's the kind of deities it would be really nice to have. Has this story been told? No. So, I had it very strongly that this is what we should have. So, we knew people at the India High Commission. So we got permission to put little containers, like cardboard containers with a slot. And it said, donation to the Radha Krishna Fund. And that was how we thought we'd raise enough money for purchasing Archaviggraha. So we had them on all three floors, and every week or fortnight we would see how much was collected. And they were all these small coins, 50p, small amounts. So after some really long time, we collected the massive sum of 42 pounds. And that seemed like a fortune for us. So one day, and I was in charge of the funds. So one day, Shamshunda Prabhu came into me and he said, Shimona, I need that money.
Do you remember that?
Oh, this is good. That's another thing, is that we all remember so differently. And we even remember, I would love to sit with these other five devotees and speak for maybe months at a time. It just keeps moving. To help each other to remember with clarity. I mean, Dhananjaya remembers if it was raining out or someone's dhoti fell off, and I love someone who has that capacity to remember and record details. Anyway, one day he came to me and he said, I need that money. So I said, well, that's for the deities. You can't have that money. He said, no, the truck. The truck? Something was like the engine fell out of the truck. A new carburetor. Did it cost £42 for a carburetor? No, but whatever it was, he needed the money. So for me, it was like catastrophic that this would happen. So the money went, and as I was reading the letters before coming here again, I noticed that at the very late date of November 26, 1969, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Aniruddha asking for deities that had been carved by Gaurasundar in San Francisco in 1967. And those deities were very small. They were wood, carved in wood, and under 18 inches. And Krishna was painted marine blue, really no shading whatsoever. And Rani was painted cadmium yellow, very, very bright yellow. And he said, I want those, it was a footnote to his letter to him, and he said, I want those deities sent immediately by air freight. This is November 26th. We did not have deities. And the installation was scheduled for 14 December. So then the next letter that the deities are mentioned is 5th December. So it's between November 26th and 5th December that Sri Sri Radhananda Nishwara were captured by Srila Prabhupada and meant to be installed in ISKCON London Yatra. So this is the night before, and devotees can remember selectively different things. And I recall this dark room with the candles twinkling on the altar, and the exhausted devotees, just half of their minds on an ocean of service that needed to be done for the next morning. But when Srila Prabhupada came in the temple, a flood of his presence into the room, and we garlanded him with a white chrysanthemums, and he sat there with a light over his head, and he picked up his kartals and he began chanting, and we all followed Prabhupada chanting. And that kirtan was one of many in my mind that nor captured forever. I remember looking up at his eyes, and they were gray slits. You know how sometimes in Buddhist tradition they show eyes on the top of the head. So Prabhupada's eyes took on these oceanic qualities. And he looked down. I notice here some people look around at each other when they chant and see if everyone's grooving or whatever. But Srila Prabhupada, he looked at his disciples from the Vyasa San, and many disciples felt that, you know, Srila Prabhupada didn't look at them, but through them. So he looked down with those gray eyes, and he just saw everything in the room. And he chanted Hare Krishna. So it's often been told that Srila Prabhupada considered the most important thing in worshipping a deity the chanting of the holy name. Kali Yuga, it's very difficult to execute deity worship properly. So he watched us chanting Hare Krishna, and then we all closed our eyes and chanted Hare Krishna with him, and he took us to the spiritual world, Kirtan that evening. So that was the beginning of the installation of Sri Sri Radhakrishna. And I believe that Kirtan is today the beginning of this next year of service to their lordships. And no matter what the size of the temple, or our lacks, or our tremendous desire to serve the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada by following the mood of his instructions. This has been brought up so many times this week as the ocean of nectar of this yatra, 40 years of this yatra have been churned, is Prabhupada's person, Prabhupada's mission, Prabhupada's qualities, and all of that is tendered at the lotus feet of Radha Madanishwara. So for us to, I've really been thinking also, I'll say one more thing before I finish. So that was that night before, and it was very powerful, and the essence of it was the holy name and the presence of our founder Acharya. And his wishes for us to worship this transcendental Archa Vigraha, which later became known as Sisi Radha Lakshmishwara. And just one more thing, that I've thought that aside from churning the ocean of nectar, and aside from the wonderful sangha that we've had, even though brief and perhaps not as long as we would all like, that we take this opportunity to really each and every one of us go inside, and everyone who's watching this or hearing this, that we all take the opportunity to go inside and before you take rest tonight. Srila Prabhupada gave instruction at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Lananishwara that each devotee at the end of the day should come in front of the deity and report to the deity. Do you do that? No. Well, it's something you might think of doing or starting or rekindling from the old days. To go in front of the Lord and reveal your mind to the Lord, what service you did, what you'd like to do tomorrow, and make your service better. So we all did that. After the devotees came back from Sankirtan at night, we had prasadam together, and then everyone would go up to the temple to put before their lordships took rest. And do that. So I was thinking that tonight each and every one of us could report into Sri Sri Radha Lananishwara and maybe make some report to him what you did in Krishna consciousness, what you tried to do in Krishna consciousness for Srila Prabhupada's pleasure, and then make some vow, some breath that this is what I want to work on this next year in Radha Lananishwara service, or your Archa Vigraha service. Does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah.
Okay. So, that's just an opening, thank you. No problem.
In celebrating the arrival of Sri Sri Radha Madanishwara, my role in the yatra took a shift, because up until that time we were more in a together mode, even if we were like sometimes not together due to our living. But we came back in from Lennon's place, and once again there was a little shift in the mode. And because I had a smaller member of the party, Saraswati, and there was another small member, Jivananda, son of Draupadi and Devananda, we were both mothers and the children. Was decided we shouldn't live in the temple because it might be a disturbance. So we were living a few blocks away in a basement type of bed and breakfast. And we'd take turns coming to do service. One would come and do service, and the other would stay and mind the other child. So in that respect, I didn't have a close association with the deities. I certainly never was like a pujari in those days, because it wasn't considered proper for mothers with children to do deity seva. Mm-hmm. But the service was mostly to the devotees by going down in that kitchen that we had and cooking. And that was something that was very special. Cooking was always a challenge because we never knew what ingredients we might have. Mm-hmm. And when the deities came, it became a little tighter because we had to have very special ingredients for them. And that was wonderful that, you know, the best would go to them. That mood was definitely prevalent and appreciated by the devotees. And Mahaprasad was definitely honored. It was really sacred. It was something you felt really privileged to get even a speck of. And sometimes I see nowadays that Mahaprasad gets kind of discarded sometimes, but it was really something you'd light up for, especially for the Mahaprasada Shishi Radhavanda Nishora. We were speaking the other night, the four of us, and during that discussion we brought up and glorified and remembered His Holiness Mukunda Maharaj, the one of the members who wasn't present, and her face, Janaki Devadasi. And I wanted to bring up the other member that isn't present, just baby Saraswati, who was part of the Yatra. Srila Prabhupada wrote in the letter to Jaya Govinda in February of 1968 that in the service of the Lord there is no distinction between caste, creed, color, or sex. And this was something we certainly, as early devotees, we felt there was no distinction. And we were equally welcome to take part in devotional activities. And as such, Saraswati was one of the members of the Yatra, and she had her own little world and her own little set of activities. And she definitely had her own relationship with Srila Prabhupada that was distinct from being my daughter or Shamsundar's daughter. Prior to coming here to the United Kingdom, we had stopped in Montreal. And we stopped in Montreal because His Divine Grace was there, and we wanted to take His blessings before taking this big step across the ocean. We wanted to make sure we'd be successful, and putting our head at His lotus feet was the best way we could imagine doing that. And there was also a sense of, just like I had told the story, how He left us and went to India, and there was some trepidation that He might not return, we might not see Him again. We were now going, and there was some trepidation, some unspoken thought that we might not see Him again. We were leaving and we didn't know where our journey or path would take us. So we were very much eager to meet him. And we were told that if you touch the Buddha's feet of the spiritual master, the sins of 10,000 lifetimes would be removed. We weren't told that you were dumping those sins on this lotus feet. That part wasn't told to us. We also knew, we had seen, there weren't so many Indians in America at that time, and we had seen those who would approach Swamiji, Srila Prabhupada, try to touch his feet, and sometimes it was permitted and sometimes not. But we certainly never attempted that because we could sense that it wasn't something that he was pleased with. But on this occasion, feeling that we needed to be really prepared in whatever way we could be prepared for this mission, coming here as we were with just so little to hand out in one respect. I mean, we didn't have literature or other media. We decided to ask if we could have permission to touch his feet. And that permission was actually granted. So that was an anticipation in terms of seeing him. It's kind of skipped ahead because when we first landed, we were so anxious to see him that myself and Janaki immediately changed clothes and we decided to go search for where he was staying. The temple in Montreal was an old bowling alley, and it had only one small bathroom and a little tiny walk-through kitchen, so they had some accommodation nearby for Srila Prabhupada. We didn't know where it was, but we were definitely convinced if we just went out and ran around the street, we would find it. And the reason I was sure we could find it was because I knew we'd seen some orange cloth hanging out somewhere. Because that was the what would happen. His servant would watch this cloth and hang it out somewhere. So I just knew if we ran around the neighborhood, we'd find it. And we certainly did. And we were, heart pumping, just really excited. Myself and Janaki went. And Govinda Dasi and Gosinda were his servants. And Govinda Dasi was there and immediately announced to Srila Prabhupada that we had come, who immediately indicated we should come in. I was holding my small daughter, who was 6 weeks old at the time, and Janaki and I both entered, but I came first, and he looked up and said, "Oh, this very morning I had a dream about this very child." And he said, "Yes, this very child, I dreamt about her this morning." And I was kind of I was stunned from suddenly there he was, we were face to face with him, and then he said that, and it didn't occur to me even to say, "What did you dream?" But the fact that he said that indicated that he knew my daughter. That's what he indicated to me. And had he wanted to say more, I'm sure he would have. So that was one indication of her relationship. So then when we were departing and we came to that point, we came to his room. It was the day after. First there was Janmashtami, and then there was his appearance day ceremonies, which we celebrated. And in fact, during the appearance day celebration, we were all in that temple room. Devotees came from far and wide. And they brought his great big gigantic tully full of various preparations, and he took the Gulabjaman and bit into it. And then he motioned to me to come forward. And he gave me that Gulabjaman. I was kind of febrile. And he gave me this Gulabjaman, and he indicated it was for my daughter. And my foolish mind thought, "Well, she's only 6 weeks old. She can only take milk." But then I kind of got back on track there and realized, that she could certainly suck on this Gulabjaman, which was made of dried milk. And so I put it by her mouth right where his lips had been, and she immediately began sucking. So that was actually her first Maha Maha Prasadam. And again, indicating, because he called me, but indicated this was for her, that they have a relationship. So then the next day when we're departing, we went into the little quarters, and one by one we were went forward. They moved aside his little desk, and he stretched out his lotus feet. And one by one, we each came and put, at least myself, I didn't put my hands in his lotus feet, I put my head in his lotus feet, and I think probably each one did more or less the same.
I put my lips on his lotus feet.
Sorry about that. I wasn't right down there watching with but when our heads went down, he took his hand and he was rubbing the back of our heads individually. And you're always told that you're not going to be enlightened by the guru zapping you or doing something. But truly, when he rubbed the back of our heads, it was there was some electricity going on. And I understood that whatever was going to happen, we were going off into the wild blue yonder, to the unknown, but somehow we were going to be successful in this mission to serve him in the United Kingdom. And I felt that that was, happening. They talk about empowerment. We were getting the empowerment. Then we went through that, and then the desk was put back. He was smiling. He looked at me and he went like this. He asked me to hand him the baby. So I handed him the baby, and he's holding her with, she was facing out, he was facing out, and he took his garland and flipped it over both of them. And he smiled and he says, "Now they will say, what kind of sannyas is he?" And he was referring to his god brothers, who he was had mentioned, yes, my god brothers had met. They were went to London. They were sannyasis and they failed. But I am sending grihasthas. So now he made this little quip and they'll say, what kind of sannyas is he? So then again, this very sweet and intimate relationship that was between them. It wasn't, from the mother, it wasn't from the father. I will tell just two other ones. They happened here in the United Kingdom. And again, they were indicative of his sweetness and his attention to his little disciple. So we were at the Lennon Estate. Both of these pastimes took place there. And Jamuna had explained how we had different activities, and mine was quite often in the morning cooking breakfast prasadam. So the morning walk would be going by, and we had these Dutch doors on the little apartments where we were, and it opened the top door so we could see. But Saraswati was small, she couldn't see over the door, but she could understand that Prabhupada was coming on the walk. And somehow she got that door open and ran out, and she grabbed his hand. So I was in a quandary because I couldn't touch Prabhupada to pull her away, and she wasn't, as Prabhupada's dress, he looked at her and said, "You're not dressed properly." And then she didn't have an overcoat or her wellies on. So Prabhupada kind of nodded to me, which meant go get those things, which I did. And when I tried to put them on her, she still wouldn't let go of Prabhupada's hand. So I had to put one hand, and then she went like this and let go of the other hand, because she was afraid maybe perhaps I would take her away. And then she went off on the morning walk without her mother. Jamuna, I asked her if she remembered this, but she was doing the arti, so she wasn't so much aware of what was going on. But Jamuna would often do the arti because she was being instructed in deity worship by Srila Prabhupada, and he had a small deities in the upstairs room where he stayed. And as was mentioned also, my daughter had complete freedom and access. She didn't need an appointment to see Srila Prabhupada. So the arti was going on, and she was in the room. Jamuna offered the flower, and she gave it to Srila Prabhupada. And for some reason, at that exact time, my daughter decided to leave the room. And she was marching out And Srila Prabhupada took the flower and he threw it at her and it hit her on the back of the head. And so Saraswati wheeled around, picked up the flower, and holding her little arm straight out, she marched straight back to Srila Prabhupada and she popped it in his mouth. So this became the second issue. This was the second issue that was troubling the mind of his servant. Not Pujuna,
but
Purushottam. The first one was, I told the other day, when we watched the moon landing, and Prabhupada said they did not go, so that troubled his mind. This little joyful incident between Srila Prabhupada and his small disciple, Saraswati, really troubled his mind. And it was one of the causes of his departure. And Srila Prabhupada, sometime later, in a letter to Gargamuni, actually acknowledged this, you know, saying how unfortunate he had this mindset. He couldn't understand the behavior. Prabhupada didn't say this, but what he was indicating, he couldn't understand the behavior of a pure devotee. So there's many other wonderful exchanges between them. But one exchange occurred that they were not physically present. And that exchange was when I went to Srila Prabhupada in Juhu and asked him if he would initiate her. She was in America, she was at the Gurukul. But I had come to the conclusion that I wasn't fit to be a parent in terms of, you know, you have to be able to deliver your offspring to make them fit to go back to Godhead, and I saw in myself a complete inability to do this. So I thought the only way I might be successful is if Srila Prabhupada would initiate her. So I went to him and I asked him. There was a darshan, everybody left, and I was still there sitting in the corner of the roof, and he called me forward and you want to speak? And I said, yes. And I said, would you initiate Saraswati? I gave my reason. So his answer was rather interesting, the first answer. He said, they are already initiated. Again, I didn't have the presence of mind to ask, what do you mean? I was just on my mission to get my daughter initiated, so I said, yes, but will you initiate her? So he said, bring me beads, which I had, and I handed him the beads, and I sat, and he chanted on the beads. Then he handed them back to me and he said, and her name will be Miss Saraswati Devi, which it already was, but now it was formalized by initiation. And he said she may sit in on the next Vairagya. So in this way she became not only she was his disciple, but she became his disciple. And I still have great hope for her that because of this connection, that maybe one day she will be here also greeting all of you. So before I close, I would just like to apologize to my God brothers and God sisters who are here, because we are sitting here once again and you are sitting there. And again, it is most of you, and looking at Bala Gopala and, you know, so many others who we lit a match and started the fire, left the room, and you stayed behind. And all of this is here because of what all of you have done. What to speak of all of the grand disciples, who some of you have served, you know, more years here than I was ever here. So it puts me in some awkward feeling in my heart, but I'm very grateful to all of you, and I beg your forgiveness that I'm sitting here. Hare
Krishna. As you were saying, Jamuna, about the different points of view about all these stories, how we each remember a wonderful incident, but from a different point of view, it gives it so much more flavor. I remember now you're talking about the night before the inauguration of the deity, the installation. From my point of view, I was very envious of you who were able to sit out in the temple room and chant the Sri Prabhupada and get ready for the great event. At that time, I was behind the curtain. We still didn't have an altar built. This is the night before the installation. There was no altar. The other girls and so on were busy making clothes and getting the deities ready, and there was no altar to put them. I had purchased a couple of antique columns, four antique columns, and some other bits of wood to build an altar. But there was no time to drill holes in the marble and anchor everything and construct the framework of the pagoda or the altar. So I was just sitting, working back there as quiet as I could, hoping you guys would leave so I could make some noise. Pound and carry on and build this altar. And finally, as a last resort, we just set the columns there and laid the wood over the top of them, hoping the whole thing would hold up. And then I collapsed. Like you said, we were so exhausted. I was a youth, 25, 6 years old, with lots of energy, but for 2 days we've been working day and night to finish. And at one point, as I started to walk out behind the curtain, I collapsed and went unconscious. I woke up about 18, 20 hours later in my room upstairs. I missed the whole thing. The whole fruit of my labor was lost.
And found.
I wanted to be there so much for that initiation, that installation. And then I heard, now Gurudas has got another point of view, because he was backstage supporting the whole framework when it collapsed. He and Prabhupada were holding it all up so that the deity wouldn't get smashed. But so when I did finally wake up, I was so guilty. I felt so guilty. And I went down to Sri Prabhupada's room. And after bowing, I stood up and said, Prabhupada, I'm so sorry that I was not there and that the altar collapsed and all my work has failed. And he laughed. He said, don't worry about it. He said, Radha and Krishna did not want an altar over their head anyway. So from that day on, there was just the Dharma deities above with Radha and Krishna all together in one enclosure. But I was trying to think of a story that would best illustrate Srila Prabhupada's power and his essence that had to do with London. This is very much a London story, although it didn't take place here altogether. But many times when we were sitting in Prabhupada's room at Berry Place, he would start talking about, people would come in with news clips. Everyone wanted to tell, because Prabhupada didn't read newspapers or anything, it was always a good opening to get in a conversation with Prabhupada by telling him what was going on that day in the news. Oh, today the Russians have done this, the Cuban crisis, or whatever. So, but whenever someone would do this, Prabhupada would say, you know, I want to go behind the Iron Curtain. I want to go to Russia. And several times there were some German devotees who would come from Germany and visit with him, like Hansajuda, Krishna Das, and others who were in Germany. And as in those days, it was always thought that Germany was kind of the Berlin through the wall. That's how you entered the Iron Curtains. You went through Germany. So Prabhupada was always, at many occasions, was requesting these German disciples to get him a visa to go there. And when they would come back after 1 or 2 months, he'd say, have you got my visa yet? No, we're still trying. We're still trying, Prabhupada. So Krishna Das, on his own, found out the name of a man in Moscow who was the head of the Oriental Studies Department in the academy there in Moscow. So he began writing him letters telling him about Prabhupada. And lo and behold, one day a letter came from this professor saying, oh, whenever you are in Moscow, please come and see me. So that was the only contact we had behind the Iron Curtain. Prabhupada was very anxious to go there, time after time. Well, everything got delayed, one thing and another. We all went to India. A year or so passed, and we were in Mumbai in the first temple on, was it Warden Road? Seven Akashganga was the name of our little temple there, and this building on Warden Road, I believe it's called. And Prabhupada had freshly arrived. I think that was after the cross night on Pando. And one devotee came, Hans Duda came from Germany. Prabhupada asked him, if we were sitting in his room, and he said, "Have you got my visa to Russia yet?" And Hansa Duda said, "No, he's trying, this and that difficulty. It's been," and Prabhupada was a little upset. He said, "Well, it has been 3 years now. Still there is no visa?" And he turned to me and said, "Shamsundar, can you get me visa to Russia?" And I said, "I'll try, Sri Prabhupada. I don't know." You know, that was just another thing. Maybe. I was talking about magic last night. Well, you just do it and see what happens. So I went to the Russian embassy, and by the end of that day, we had visas, including two Americans. Americans were forbidden behind the Iron Curtain. To this day, I don't know how they gave us that visa. And but it was the trick was it was for 5 days only, and it had to you had to go within 48 hours of visa. So I came running back to Prabhupada and said, he said, "Did you get the visa?" I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, here in the passport so we can go." So within hours, we were on a plane to Moscow. 5 days. And he said, "You will come with me." So we had no plan, only this one invitation from this Professor Kotovsky. So upon arrival, there's so many stories to tell about Russia, but to make it short, on arrival, I called up or somehow contacted the University of Kotovsky, and he said, "Yes, come by tomorrow at such and such a day." We only had 5 days. So one first day went by just getting settled in. Second day we went to see Professor Kotovsky. And the reason that you can read his conversation, Kotovsky's conversation with Prabhupada to this day, is remember these repressive times in Russia, those of you who come from behind the old Iron Curtain. Things like tape recorders, things like that were forbidden. And they even searched us at the door before we came into the university. But I secreted a small tape recorder in those days, the first transistors were coming out, transistor tape recorders, and I put it in my bead bag. So I snuck it in there, and there was no question of saying, "Can I record this?" because it was forbidden, anything like that. So I snuck it under the, took it out of my bead bag and put it under the table and held it with my hand the whole time that he was talking. So anyway, second day goes by. There's nothing to do now. It's 3 days have passed. 2 days have passed out of five. There's still nothing to do. Now our mission is done. The only contact we had was Kotovsky. The conversation has been successfully recorded for posterity. That's it. Third day, I said, "Srila Prabhupada, what should we do? Should we go sightseeing?" He said, "Yes, let us go sightseeing." So the hotel arranged. We went on a bus with a bunch of other tourists, mostly from Iron Curtain-type countries. So we were the only Americans. And he was the only Indian. And we went to this place and that place, and all along the route, Prabhupada would make comments. Especially, I pointed out a big church to him and showed him the guards in front of the door to the church, that no one was allowed in there, and so on. And we passed many soldiers and tanks and armor, and it was all so boring. But Prabhupada was making different comments about everything we saw. And finally, we got way out of Moscow to this this Stalin University, or whatever it's called, this huge Marx University. And it was a vast cement structure, and of course, the guide said, was all bubbling, what a wonderful thing this was to see. And Prabhupada was bored to death. He says, "Can we get out of here? Can we leave?" So I called a taxi, and we just jumped in. It's totally forbidden. You're supposed to report every mood you made in those days. If I wanted to go across Moscow, I had to get official permission to do so. But we jumped into a taxi, back to the hotel. And we got to the hotel, I realized we had no money. No dollars, anything, what to speak of rubles. And the driver didn't speak any English. I said, no money. And he turned around and looked at us, and I could tell that he had seen Prabhupada as a holy man, that he was a saint of some kind. He didn't know what kind, but he said, and in those days, you know, the drivers, nobody made any money. I mean, this was a lot of money for him to just give up like that. He was probably half starving. So the third day went by. There's only 2 days left in our entire trip. So I realized then I needed to get some money. I took some dollars from Srila Prabhupada and went down to the bank. This is the third day, late afternoon. And two boys approached me as I entered the bank and said, you want to change some rubles on the black market? You got some dollars? I said, yeah, I better not. The rate is much lower in the bank, but I'm a little afraid we might get in trouble. So I did that and came out, and they were still standing there. One was an Indian boy. So we started talking, and his friend, the Russian friend, the young man with him, spoke English also. So we started talking, and I told him about Prabhupada. He asked me also, he said, do you have any jeans to sell? No, we don't wear jeans. Then he said, do you have any Beatles records? No, we don't have any Beatles records, but we're friends with the Beatles. And my spiritual master is the spiritual master of the Beatles. He's here in Moscow. So immediately they wanted to see me. And I brought them up on that night. This is the third night we are there. And Srila Prabhupada was he lit up like a light bulb when this Russian boy came in to see him. And something special happened over the next 2 days that there's no way to describe. Srila Prabhupada planted Krishna consciousness in this boy in the most powerful way I've ever saw him in all the years I saw him in action. The most powerful condensed period of his existence with us. He taught this boy. He immediately changed this boy into an almost atheist, communist student, into a Krishna conscious devotee, to the point where the boy slept on the floor in my room that night and could hardly wait to get up and hear some more the next morning. And in that way, in 2 days, he lived and ate and slept with us and just listened to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had him reciting prayers. He showed him how to prepare prasadam. He taught him the essence of what preparing prasadam is, that it's offered to Krishna first. The only book we had was Malati Snuck. Before we left, we were told we cannot bring any books of any kind. And Malati, in her usual manner, snuck a Bhagavad Gita into my suitcase. That's a funny story, too, at the customs coming in. You had a lot of photos and loose mementos and things stuck in the pages of that Bhagavad Gita. And the KGB, when they opened their suitcase at the airport, they pulled some clothes up, and this Bhagavad Gita came flying out of the suitcase. And I thought, oh, God, it's over. Where's Malati? All the photos and loose things in the Bhagavad Gita went flying everywhere, and the KGB guy was so flustered that he had made a mistake of some kind. He spent all of his attention picking up all these things and shoving them back in the suitcase just to get us out of there. So the first Bhagavad Gita into Russia, as it is, was Malati's contribution. Anyway, so... Prabhupada asked me to give the Bhagavad Gita to this boy, and he took it. And then So Prabhupada walked him through Bhagavad Gita, almost page by page, for 2 days, 2 nights, hammered it. And this boy was such an adept student. He just grasped the essence immediately and asked the right questions to get the answers he needed. So that at the end of 2 days, and we even had time the next day, I had told Prabhupada about this Russian writer who was very popular at the time, named Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who had written a very popular book in America about life in Russia. And I asked this boy if he could find him out and we would go meet him. And this boy said, "I know where he lives. All the artists and writers in Russia live in this one compound outside of Moscow, some distance, where they can be watched by the KGB. There was a big fence around the whole compound. They each all individually had homes in there, but they were under the eye of the state, so they could be monitored. So without permission, again, from any authority, I hopped on a train with him that fourth day afternoon, and we went out some distance on a train and started, when we went through the gates in there, I pretended that I was from India, so they let me in. Because India in those days, Indira Gandhi and the Russians were kind of cozy. So they thought I was Indian, they let me in. And we walked down all these streets asking people where they lived, and pretty soon we came to Alexander Solzhenitsyn's house. And as we knocked on the door, his wife came to the door, but she was very afraid. Oh, she was trembling. And we said that he told her, asked her in Russian language if we could meet her husband. She said, "Well, he's in jail. They took him away to jail a few days ago. He was writing in an unauthorized way in a wood storage house behind their house, where you store firewood. He had a little desk in there. And he was writing. They discovered him and busted him, took him to jail." But at that moment, this guy walked up who apparently inhabited the same house. They shared a house, named Rostropovich, who was a famous celloist. He was the best celloist in Russia. And his wife was a famous ballerina. And I had the only other little book, the book that I brought, I decided to sneak a book in too. Because it was the smallest book we had. It was only about that thick, and it was very small, called Easy Journey to Other Planets. So I did have another book. But I knew it was not something that... This boy had the Bhagavad Gita, so I had this book, and I thought I want to give this book to Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And to my knowledge, Rostropovich did give him that book. So another great personality in Russia was touched during this period, short period also. But going back, I mean, if you see Srila Prabhupada's potency in preaching to point out or isolate this one incident is very graphic for us, because it proves beyond doubt the strength of Krishna conscious message, that it cannot be something so mundane and easily obtained. This boy was selected by Krishna, God knows how many births, to receive this, and such an amazing thing has evolved through the years. There's so many wonderful stories. I've met some of the Russian boys and girls here over the last few days, and I see how intimately this was all tied to London. It was Prabhupada's London. Prabhupada used London as his jump-off point for the rest of the world, basically. Even for India. The whole India yatra is all from London. It all came from London. You're at the epicenter. You must always keep it this way. That it must be a place where you all prepare and go out from here to other places and take the rest of the world by storm.
Can I just ask a question? Shamsundar Prabhu, who was that boy? Who you?
Ananta Shanti was his name.
Ananta.
Prabhupada initiated him also.
Right there and there.
Yeah, I think I gave him my beads. Yeah. And before leaving there, Ananta Shanti Well, the Indian boy who was with him, his father was the ambassador, I believe. The ambassador to India. So he agreed, Prabhupada requested him, because he could speak to the Indian boy directly. He says, I want you to bring in books and look after this Russian devotee. So he got his father to bring in books through the diplomatic pouch. That's how powerful this whole thing happened. It all happened in 2 days. And then he said, before we left, he said, well, you know, Swamiji, before I can really get some freedom here, I'll need to have a foreign wife. So on the way, we flew from here, I think, to Paris and then to London. But he asked me on the plane if there was anyone in mind that I could think of that would be a suitable wife for this boy. And even though I thought about Mondakini, I thought I'd better ask Valentin what she thought. So when we arrived in London, one of the first things Prabhupada did is call her Mondakini and just proposed to her right there. And said, will you go to Russia and marry this boy? She said, oh, yes, Prabhupada.
Thank you very much. Some years ago in Bombay, we all gathered to talk about how we made some contribution to the opening of the Juhu Temple. And it was like each one was a piece of the puzzle. All maybe senior devotees were there, and they told their stories, and what was so nice, they left their individual egos at the door. They were simply Prabhupada's children, and we heard the stories, and I didn't know that. You did that? Isn't that wonderful? And that's what was happening here. We were going out Harinam 3 times a day. And even though we were together, it was true, Shamashinda was carving and Jamuna was getting the whole Archivigraha deity program together, and I was going out on Harinam and also inviting dignitaries and
BBC.
And BBC and all of that kind of thing, High Commissioner, get the guest list together. Prabhupada wanted to see who was coming, and he was very happy with some of the invitees. And so each one of us is like a piece of the puzzle. And we were doing different things, so one and different simultaneously. We were together, but we were doing different things. But when Radhalandan Ishvara came into our midst, it was like the second part, the preaching and the deity worship. Prabhupada is the center of our lives, yet sometimes Prabhupada would go to Russia. So he, in every temple, installed the center of our lives that will be there when he's not there. And I remember the focus of the temple that came and they came in our midst. So beautiful. Now, in the past days, I've been telling a lot of humorous stories, a lot of levity, because Prabhupada has a lot of levity. It's full. Prabhupada is always forgiving us with his sense of humor. For instance, we talked about touching his lotus feet. One time we were in some place in India. I was sitting right by Prabhupada, because that's what I like to do, sitting right by Prabhupada. He never kicked me out. Sometimes other people wanted to, but he never did. And people were bringing Prabhupada gifts and touching his feet. And I knew of this idea of people putting their sins on a powerful guru. And this happens. But Prabhupada let this happen. And he turns to me as people are giving him gifts. And he says, just see how they're treating saintly people. So he was categorizing himself like that, rather than, just see how they're treating me. And then he got into one of his levity moods and he said, as they are touching my feet, and I may be absorbing their sins, I pat them back on the head and give it to them back. So because Prabhupada, he sees in each and every one of us our talents, and so because I have a sense of humor, he would encourage that. He would like to see me so he can test out his sense of humor. And he said that someone without a sense of humor is not Krishna conscious. It is part of the process. However, and he did it all the time. However, I've been purposely doing that in these days because I want you to realize that sense that Krishna consciousness is a great adventure. And as we institutionalize anything that happened in so many movements and organizations I've seen, people become comfortable, they have their titles, they have their positions, they go along, they don't have to think anymore. The rent is paid, except one person, the temple president, usually has to worry about that, and while the other devotees don't. I experienced that as one of the many temple presidents here. So I've purposely shared with you Prabhupada's sense of humor, his sense of levity, because I want you to feel that Krishna consciousness is a Navayovana, an ever-fresh process every day, every moment. I don't want you to get jaded. And some people have said, you know, I want to preach here, but the administration may not like it, and you may not be empowered. And I said, how do you know you're not empowered? Each of us have a unique and individual relationship with Krishna, Achintabhedabheda Tattva. That's one of the beautiful things about personalism. What separates us from other fundamental groups is personalism. We have this personal relationship. And so, I've done this to encourage you to find this humor, find this adventure, find this boldness to carry this on. But as we make progress, we're tested. It happened in San Francisco. It happened on the boat over to Srila Prabhupada. He had a stroke. He was making progress. It happened in San Francisco. Another setback. It shocked us. Our father was out of our midst, and he may never come back. What are we to do? And then he instilled, I may die at any moment. Carry this on. And then I realized we were a movement. We weren't just with the swami being spoon-fed and taught how to cook. And here's this new prayer on the black, the slate. And here's this, and you could do that. And you can, why are you photographing me when people are chanting? Photograph them. That is more important. He was referring to himself as if he was a piece of furniture, not important, so humble. All these things. And when he had that setback in San Francisco, he wrote me a letter that this is Maya's test because we're making progress. And so, yes, it is so much fun. But sometimes setbacks happen. The Rath yacht came crashing down after we pushed it all the way from Balam. And then a block later, you know. Are we attached? No, we're not attached to the fruits of our actions. And that's what all the humor is. Smuggling books and doing something, deviating from the norm. That's the miracle is defined as deviating from the norm. And some people have asked me about preaching a lot lately, and this is not a shloka, and I don't want you to necessarily follow it, but sometimes it's easier to ask forgiveness and permission. And so we did these zany things. I mean to say, people are saying, oh, well, now it's taking 2 years to get initiation, and it's becoming... Okay. Yes. So, I'm encouraging them to just persevere, but we have to we have to use our imagination for preaching, and you know, we can say this person isn't this or this person isn't that, but maybe down the road we might not be this or that. So, you know, instead of putting them on the defense, it's better to encourage them. Like Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, that some people may fall away, but instead of making them feel bad, we want to welcome them back, understand. So as we make this progress, Krishna will test us sometimes. And that's what happened here. We were all doing our different duties. And I was back in the temple. I didn't go to the Hindu center with Prabhupada. And they went off in the Krishna van. And they came back with Lundanishwar. And suddenly, we had the other wonderful balance, the preaching and worship of the deity in the temple. Now, it felt wonderful. And what beauty, what beauty. Frankly, I have to admit, and I was in Vrindavan for many years, but this really is my favorite yacht.